Hi, this is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant. Every week I present new and creative ways to help make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, I give practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back, welcome back. So today is a special day. We're attempting something new that we've never done before. What we're doing is Carol is at a conference, a functional medicine conference on toxicology, detoxification, and how the toxins that we carry in our bodies affect our minds. So today we are recording from the conference with Carol and Jessica Bonovich. And Jessica Bonovich has worked as a consultant with the Great Plains Laboratory for 10 years. The Great Plains Laboratory is a world leader in providing testing for metabolic, genetic, mitochondrial, and environmental factors in chronic illnesses. They were one of the first labs to identify the high toxic burden that autistic children carry, and their work has expanded from there. Jessica Bonovich is a nurse and has multiple certifications ranging from biochemistry to pain management. And she works with patients and consults with them. So today we are using brand new recording equipment. So have patience. The interview is brilliant. It's directly from Functional Medicine Conference on Toxicology, on poisons in the body that affect our brain, our ability to think, our mood, our attitude, and our hormones. So listen, learn, I will be. Unfortunately, I wasn't there. So this is Carol and Jessica Bonovich. Give us your feedback. We want to hear what you think about this. This is part of our series of bringing you with us to the conferences and getting the information directly as doctors and medical professionals are receiving it. I find this quite exciting. Hopefully you will too. So listen, learn, enjoy. And this is Carol Peterson, our very own, and Jessica Bonovich from the Great Plains Laboratory.
A topic that's on everybody's mind right now, and you bring up a really good point, which is that, gosh, everybody has glyphosate in their system. So we have very sensitive detection limits. A person's urine come back as non-detect, no matter how clean they are, maybe one or two.
My goodness. Yeah. Let's back up just for a moment and tell everybody where the glyphosate's coming from.
So it comes from, excellent question. So it comes from mostly grains that are sprayed. They're genetically modified oftentimes, but not always. They're genetically modified to receive this glyphosate, which makes them resistant to microbes.
Okay.
So it helps these crops to grow and thrive. But because these plants have been modified to take in the glyphosate, you can't wash it off. It is taken up into the cell of the plant. And so every single cell in that plant has a little bit of glyphosate in it. And so when you eat it, you're eating that glyphosate. So that's the whole thing about, you know, the non-GMO movement and organic movement, because, and this is worth saying, it doesn't have to be non-GMO to have glyphosate on it. So wheat in particular is oftentimes not genetically modified. But what they'll do is they'll spray glyphosate on it after it's been harvested to hasten the drying of it. Uh-huh. So it's not been genetically modified, but it's covered in glyphosate. So, you know, choosing organic is actually quite a bit more important than choosing non-GMO for that reason.
Uh-huh.
So you want to make sure that things are non-GMO. But the problem is that, you know, the organic farmer next door, with all the best intentions in the world, is going to get back spray from the glyphosate.
That's right. It's aerosol all over the place.
It's aerosolized, and it's also highly water soluble. So it's in the groundwater. So the same water, the same aquifer that the farmer next door, the organic farmer next door, is using, is contaminated with glyphosate as well. So it's, you know, best practices. It's not through any malice at all. It just contaminates the system. It's just kind of in the air. It's in the soil. It's in the water. It's, unfortunately, it's unavoidable. We do the best we can. You know, by eating organic, that is the best thing that you can do for yourself to reduce your glyphosate load. It's actually very difficult to remove from water using water filters. I know no one wants to hear that, but we also, in addition to testing people's urine, we also test people's water. And we've tested many a filtered water that comes back high for glyphosate. It's very difficult to remove.
Have you tested? Now, okay. I didn't know that. You just opened up a door of horror for me.
I know. Nobody wants to hear it.
Have you tested, like, drinking water that's sold in the grocery stores and at the airports, all the bottled up waters?
We personally haven't. So people typically will send their own water to us because they're wanting to know.
Their city water and their well water.
Well water in particular is almost always contaminated. I can oftentimes just tell by looking at a test if a person's drinking well water.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's, every, like I said, everybody comes back with some, but the ones that come up extremely high very often, they're drinking well water. And so then they'll send that water in to us.
Okay, so we really haven't covered yet why glyphosate isn't that great for people.
So we're still learning a lot about the negative consequences of glyphosate. There have been a couple of high-profile lawsuits that have occurred recently, which have demonstrated that long-term, really chronic, high doses of glyphosate can cause certain types of cancer. So that's been established in a couple of case studies, and I think warrants a lot further investigation. But one of the things that it has been well established to do, and this makes a lot of sense, it destroys your gut flora, because that's what glyphosate is designed to do, is kill microbes.
We're 90% our gut flora.
Exactly. And, you know, that's where we kind of go back around to those, you know, those things that modulate inflammation. Your gut bacteria has a huge role in signaling to your body what is appropriate, what's not appropriate, what's a toxin, what's not a toxin. Your gut flora has its finger on the pulse. And it's the thing that lets your immune system know how to respond. So when that's not appropriately balanced, you get an inappropriate, what we call neuroendocrine feedback, which is this like really fancy term, which just means that the body isn't talking to itself very well. And it starts with the way that those microbes are talking to us. So when we're killing them off completely unintentionally, just from eating the food that we eat, that highly influences how our immune system responds to our own body.
So it's becoming a medical nightmare.
In a sense, absolutely. We still have so much to learn, too, about that, because studies have been very consistently showing that plant-based diets are what diversify your microbiome.
Uh-huh.
So we want to eat
plants.
That's
a good thing.
Right? That's a good thing. But it's like, oh my gosh, well, you know, as a practitioner, I feel really challenged, because I recognize the importance of getting people to just eat plants. But I also recognize the importance of eating organic. But I also recognize not everybody can afford to eat everything organic. So if the things that are the most contaminated with glyphosate are grains.
Okay.
You know, so those are the biggies.
What about the animals that are eating the grains?
Well, you know, that's absolutely a very valid point. And that absolutely does carry through the food chain. And we're kind of back around to, you know, you almost can't avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is, studies would suggest that minimizing your meat intake is actually good for you anyway.
Uh-huh.
So the more plants that you can get, the more diverse your microbiome is.
As long as it's not grains.
So that's, you know, that's right. If you're eating a lot of glyphosate, you're going to shoot yourself in the foot. So I really can empathize with my patients and with the public on them kind of throwing their hands up and saying, well, you know, what am I supposed to do? You know, how am I supposed to do anything right for myself? I'm kind of, you know, stuck. And so minimizing grains, eating organic as much as possible, and eating as many vegetables and fruits as humanly possible really is some of the best things that you can do. There's these studies that have shown that the less diverse your diet is, the more and more your microbiome starts to look like a person who's taken multiple rounds of antibiotics.
Oh, yeah, horror.
Yeah.
And I've read that, too, that the healthiest people have... It's not a matter of numbers of bacteria. It's a matter of the numbers of different kinds.
Yes, the diversity. Key.
Okay. I have another horrible thought because I'd like to have a glass of wine, and I've read that every wine they've tested in California, which we happen to be sitting in delightful San Diego at this moment, even the organic ones have had glyphosate.
That's probably accurate. Uh-huh. I can't imagine that doesn't have at least a little bit of contamination in it. You know, the human body is actually a pretty amazing thing, and it's very resilient, and far be it from me to keep you from your wine. Okay? I'm not here to do that. Everything in moderation, right?
Right. But, you sound like my mother, and you're quite a lot younger.
We would have gotten along well, I think. Yeah, we would have gotten along well over our wine. I think you can be resilient. You can... overcome a lot with just some basic modifications in your diet and lifestyle so that you can have a glass of wine every once in a while, so you can have grains, you know, in moderation, so that you can, you know, just live your life, obviously. But if by and large you're eating lots of plant-based fruits and vegetables, being as organic as you possibly can, you'd be surprised. You know, there's this whole other aspect to health, too, that, you know, this being the mental health conference, right?
Yes, yes.
Which is stress, right?
Uh-huh.
And stress influences your immune system. Stress influences inflammation. And if you're constantly, worried about everything you're putting into your body and mouth, that in and of itself is not particularly healthy either. You know, we kind of have to have this balance of, you know, kind of quality of life and living a life that enriches us and makes us feel good. That is actually equally important to our mental health.
Quite true. Now, when we were talking yesterday, you made a point of saying not all toxins are equal. And the distinction you made was they're water-soluble toxins and they're fat-soluble toxins, and they're toxins that on the molecule, they have water-soluble parts of the molecule and fat-soluble parts of the molecule.
A little bit of both. Yeah.
So half and half.
Yeah.
Now, glyphosate, as you explained to me yesterday, is a water-soluble one.
Highly water-soluble, in and out.
Okay, in and out. So if you want to get rid of the glyphosate, what would you do?
You have to get rid of the source. So there's a lot of folks out there that'll have you believe that you need to take something.
Yes.
That is inaccurate.
Wow.
Yeah. That is completely inaccurate. 95 to 98% of glyphosate is removed in the urine without changing much at all. Now, it can get stored up here and there, and it can grab onto things here and there, and the body does what it does, and it turns over cells, and it gets rid of it over time. But for the most part, the body doesn't change it to get rid of it. So the only way to get it out of your system is to remove the source. And I really only worry about that for my patients who have pretty high levels of glyphosate. And the reason why is because I know they're being currently and constantly exposed.
Oh, yes.
You know, so if I see a high level in your urine, I know that that's happening in real time right now. It didn't bioaccumulate. It's not something that's been stored up or chronically over time because, again, water-soluble. So I know we have to find that source. We have to seek that out. Water is the first thing I look at. Most of the patients, by the time they're doing tests with me, they're usually organic. But if you're not, you know, obviously that's a step that we need to take and we need to kind of talk about. Another thing that I'll ask patients, if we really can't figure it out, is I'll say, what is it that you do that no one else does?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So do you do a disc golf, or do you have this weird tea from India or this supplement from China? Or said, well, what do you do that no one else does? We'll be suspicious of that if we've already ruled out your diet and your water. But it can be, sometimes it can be real challenging to source that out, but that truly is the way to get rid of it.
Well, having gone to the University of Wisconsin pharmacy school, we have actually, I could have just as well gone and got a PhD in toxicology in the same building. And and some of the courses are crossed, not mm-hmm. that many though.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the first rule of toxicology is remove the toxin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would have been taught had I taken the toxicology courses, to do exactly that. So what's next? Should we flip over to the fat soluble or the half and half?
Sure. Yeah, removing the source of toxin. The other thing that we talked about too is the dose makes the toxin, the dose makes mm-hmm. the poison. So how much is in your system? And that's been the prevailing wisdom with toxicity for many, many years. Nowadays, we're kind of switching our thinking a little bit around that, knowing that that dose that makes the toxin is actually quite different for different people based on their ability to eliminate these things. And the uh-huh. more fat-soluble a toxin is, the more difficult it is to eliminate, the more work it takes by your body, the longer it hangs around, and the more havoc it wreaks on its way out oftentimes. So when we talk about detoxification, and when we talk about what that actually means, what we're doing is we're trying to change the molecule a little bit, or sometimes a lot, to make it more water-soluble so we can eliminate it effectively. And that's usually, it's sometimes done inside the cell. Usually, though, it's done in the liver.
Okay. Maybe not all of our listeners know what cytosol is.
Did I say something? So inside the cell.
Oh, I thought, oh my gosh, even I don't even know it. There is a cellular organelle called the cytosol. So I misheard you. So it's inside the cell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
And so sometimes the cell itself will change the molecule.
Yes.
Oftentimes it's got to be kind of carried off to the liver, and the liver will change it, and then we'll add a molecule to it to change it and make it more water soluble. And that's where those differences come into play, because different people have differing abilities to make that happen or not. So some people have a difficult time changing these molecules and making them more water soluble, and so they tend to accumulate more. Other people, just because of their predispositions or what have you, they'll take molecules and will actually change them into more toxic compounds in an attempt to get rid of them. So that's something that happens sometimes. So the dose makes the poison, but the person's own biochemistry sort of guides what that real dose uh-huh. might be. We're learning more and more about that. That's a huge part of what we do in functional medicine, is we try to look to see how much toxicity has potentially accumulated in the individual, and is that contributing to what I call, you know, metabolic stress. So your ability to sort of compensate for the demand that's being placed on your body.
Okay, so are there some particular fat-soluble toxins that your lab is testing for?
Yes.
and has information on where these occur
in
the environment. So how about a few examples here?
A huge part of what we do is we test for these things. And it's interesting, we talk about solubility, but we test for them in urine. Because, you know, they just filter through. They end up getting out into the urine one way or the other. And so the more fat soluble something is, then the more sensitive the equipment has to be, because they're in quite a bit smaller amounts. So we have the most fat soluble toxins that we test for are those that are created by mold species. We call them mycotoxins. Those are highly fat soluble. They can stick around for quite a while, and we're learning that they can actually be quite detrimental to people's health, especially mental health, but their overall health.
Well, this is really concerning, because it's not unusual to find moldy places. They've spent water damage in a building. We've got lots of areas. New Orleans and the hurricanes, any buildings that were loaded with water potentially can grow mold. My daughter grew some mold in her bathroom. It's in a lot of places. I've stayed in hotels, and I looked around in the cracks around the tub, and I see mold. How are we going to handle this? remove the toxin.
It's huge. It's a really great question. And as a community, as a functional medicine community, we're all grappling with that question right now, actually. And what is the best way to manage mold toxicity in a mold toxic patient? Because, again, not everybody's going to manifest in the same way when they're exposed to mold. So you've got a water damaged building. You've got a family living in that home, and one of the family members is debilitated, and the rest of them, maybe some asthma, maybe some sinus issues, maybe not. And so trying to understand what it is, about that individual who's so incredibly debilitated by that mold, and helping create a safe environment for that individual moving forward, trying to support their system, is one of the things that we're actually working on as a functional medicine community. Obviously, removing the source is huge. Detoxifying the patient is huge. We're learning more and more all the time about what that involves. And the testing provides a huge guidepost for these patients, because oftentimes their family members are unconvinced. Because they're not feeling necessarily ill. So they're getting these tests back that are saying, hey, look, I actually do have toxins, and perhaps I even have the mold colonizing in my body. So we've got to deal with this. We've got to get rid of this. So it's actually quite a long process, particularly with the mold toxins. I describe it as 3 steps forward and 2 steps back. Oftentimes takes many months, sometimes many years, depending on how long people have been exposed and how quickly they're able to detoxify.
So within the same family, if you are all in the same environment, and if you were to do your test for all the members of the family, and some are really sick and some are a little sick and some don't seem to be sick at all, that's all possible, but would they all show an accumulation of mycotoxins, or would the one not sick be able to somehow detoxify themselves from the toxins with their biochemistry?
Do you see that? We need more data around this, and it's such a great question, because what we're measuring is the actual toxin.
Right.
We're not measuring what's called the metabolite, so how the body has changed it in order to get rid of it. So there's going to be a lot of inter-individual variability where that's concerned. So you could have 4 members of the same family have the same exposure to the same toxin, but based on the differing degrees of ability to detoxify, the tests are going to look quite a bit different. But what's kind of interesting and my mind likes to play with is that if you're not detoxifying well, the actual amount of toxin itself is higher, because you're not changing it up as well. You're not adding these molecules to it quite as well as you should. And so it actually does look quite a bit higher. But a lot of people are asking me, well, maybe I'm not excreting as well. Maybe my number's lower. And you know what? That's a really valid concern, too.
Yep.
So this is why we need a lot more data around all of these things. But so I guess the long and the short of this answer is it can go either way.
Oh, yeah.
So we have history and physical is huge. People oftentimes use genetic testings as well just to kind of get a sense of, you know, how those genes are working, etc. But, gosh, we really do need a lot more information on that.
It's so interesting. So could you maybe give us a set of symptoms or what the clinical picture looks like with somebody who is suffering markedly from mold toxicity?
Yes. So classic mold toxicity, you're often going to have sinus issues or pulmonary issues, migrating neuropathic pains, inability to concentrate, anxiety, sometimes profound anxiety, oftentimes made worse when you're in, most often and worse when you're in that moldy environment.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're in the water damaged building, your anxiety goes up, your pain goes up, your ability to concentrate goes down. Your fatigue, huge with all of my mold patients. They oftentimes have a lot of those gut issues because sometimes they actually do have colonization of mold as well. And another thing that I have noticed with mold patients is that stress and hormonal surges tend to exacerbate the symptoms as well. And that makes sense because many of our hormones are fat soluble. So these toxins sort of stick to these hormones, and then you have a hormonal surge, well, you end up getting a toxin surge at the same time. So if you're under a lot of stress, that's going to exacerbate your mold symptoms, or women with premenstrual syndrome, you know, that's exacerbated, or postpartum depression, you know, is exacerbated by the toxic burden.
Right, and I remember reading some work, it was Marianne Block, who no more Ritalin, and I like the word gobsmacked. She herself had a child who had some issues and went to doctor after doctor, and finally a doctor did help her. I don't remember the particular thing with her daughter, but in her book she talks about a young boy. She practices in Texas. The young boy was in New York, in a school in New York, as it turns out, and they were wanting to treat the child for ADD, ADHD, defiance, or headaches, mm-hmm. or whatever. I don't recall. The parents took this child over to her, and she was able to figure out that he only had problems when he went to school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it had to be the building. And so they determined all those problems the young man was having was the mold. And then began a big battle with the parents, with the school system.
Yeah.
But fortunately, in that case, you know, the young man's life was restored. It was otherwise going to be going down the vortex of drugs and more drugs and really stealing somebody's whole life, which is breaks me up. Now, so first of all, remove the toxin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So are there other things we can do for fat soluble?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And oh, really, good.
I try to kind of cover all the bases. You know, mm-hmm. when I talk about detoxification, I try to kind of, whether it's fat soluble, or whether it's water soluble, you know, we're going to try to remove it all. and what we can see on exam and what we can't see on exam, we want to remove it all. And there's some really basic things that people can do that are pretty affordable and accessible.
At this point, we're going to take a short break. We're speaking with Jessica Bonovich from Great Plains Laboratory. We're in the middle of a very new episode from Take Charge of Your Health. We have brought you to the conference. Carol Peterson at this moment is interviewing Jessica Bonovich at a functional medicine conference in San Diego and getting the information that is being shared with doctors and medical professionals as it is being shared directly to you. I find this quite fascinating and exciting, and we will be right back. We're looking at toxicology. We're looking at toxins in our bodies that accumulate, affecting our brain, our mood, our energy, our sex hormones, our attitudes, etc., etc. And the second half is what we can do about it. And we'll be right back. This is a brand new episode and an experiment in bringing you with us to our conferences so you're able to experience the information that's being taught to your practitioners as it's being taught to them. It's quite fascinating and exciting for us to be able to do this. We also have new equipment, so there is a learning curve, I must tell you, but right now you're listening to Jessica Bonovich from the Great Plains Laboratory, a toxicology laboratory that is able to identify toxins in the body and direct them to symptoms that we are experiencing. A brilliant lab, and Carol is doing the interview. So at this point, the second half is directing us to what we can do in our homes to create the change and make a healthier home and lifestyle, and also deal with some of the problems that we are experiencing. Enjoy.
So one of the first things that we do is we increase our basal temperature. Most people use sauna for that, to kind of get their body temperature up, but you can, you know, if you're healthy enough, you can use exercise. For little ones, we use hot baths. People sometimes use these kind of fancy biomats or things like that, but anything that increases your body temperature, because what that's going to do is it's going to make the fat-soluble compound a little more slippery, a little more wiggly. I use the analogy of if you have grease on a frying pan, you're going to use hot water. You're going to heat it up, and that's going to make it more slippery. It's going to agitate those compounds so they can be sliding off a little more easily. So the other thing that heat does is it increases your blood flow to your organs of elimination, to your gut, your liver, your kidney. So you're really helping advance, just taking advantage of the body's own natural detoxification systems in that way. We can't really go in and pull things out very effectively without pulling out a bunch of hormones and sterols and other things we need.
Right.
So we just kind of have to let the body do it on its own. Heat's our best friend for that. How much differs from person to person? In my experience, the more toxic a person is, the slower they have to go, the lower temperatures they have to be at. I tell, you know, people to start at 20 minutes and give it a full 24 hours. See how you feel. Before you do any more, because fatigue is pretty huge when you're detoxing, and you know your body's been storing that stuff for a reason. It can only detox so much at once, and we don't want to push it too much. So, you know, some people can do an hour a day, and that's awesome if they can. So doing heat therapy, and then to kind of catch what we've released, are a couple of really basic things that you can do. We do what are called gut binders. That's what
yes,
I think. Okay,
yes.
Kind of remember that. So there are lots and lots of them out there. But a really affordable, easy, over-the-counter gut binder is just activated charcoal. So just a couple of capsules of activated charcoal before you get in your sauna to grab anything that's made its way into your gastrointestinal tract and prevent it from being reabsorbed. Because these fat-soluble compounds, our body likes to scoop them right back up.
Right, with the they go into the bile, but yeah. The bile's recycled. So if it's fat-soluble like the bile is,
loop.
It just gets into a terrible loop.
Yeah, you can imagine. You can imagine why it's so difficult for these things to be removed. So the binders are pretty huge, and I will say, you know, if nothing else, those are probably the most important thing that people can do if they've got toxicity. Not just mold toxicity, but gosh, petroleum additives, pesticides, plasticizers, those are all the ones that have kind of both. So those are going to be coming out as well as you're doing this. And so you couple out, you know, activated charcoal before your sauna. If you can do it before and after, great, but charcoal does tend to be constipating.
Uh-huh.
So you're going to have to kind of keep that in mind. The other thing is to make sure it's on an empty stomach because charcoal will grab minerals and other nutrients that you want. So you want to do it on an empty stomach.
Right. It occurs to me, since I'm very interested in aging well,
mm-hmm.
what about using a little charcoal prophylactically?
Oh, I'm into that.
You're into that?
Yes. A couple of charcoal before bed on an empty stomach every night. Yeah.
Awesome.
I can think that's because overnight your body is burning fat.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you're burning fat, you're releasing toxin. So that's another way to release toxin as well.
We've talked in our programs a couple times. We've interviewed Dr. Jason Fung
mm-hmm.
on intermittent fasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is one of my concerns is when people do burn their fat, they're also releasing the toxins.
Yes.
So probably a very good thing to do along with your intermittent fasting would be catch some of these toxins. Yes, take your charcoal.
Absolutely. And I think you kind of know as well because you feel it. You kind of just don't feel particularly well. You get kind of tired. You get kind of fatigued. So I think that's absolutely a great piece of advice if you're going to do intermittent fasting. Absolutely. The other thing we do is, have you heard of a molecule called glutathione?
Of course.
Yes.
The biggie from the liver, too.
Yes. And every cell in our body makes it, actually.
Really?
It's a really important compound for detoxification and for neutralizing those free radicals and everything like that. So that's a compound that makes these things more water-soluble. Now, because our body makes it, we don't really absorb it very well because the body doesn't really perceive the need.
Uh-huh.
and it's broken down really easily as well in all of this. So if you're going to do glutathione, it has to be made in such a way that your body can absorb it, and that's called liposomal or micellization.
Yes.
And that process is actually kind of pricey. That's what makes glutathione expensive, is that process of micellization. But that is a really good thing to take before a sauna and after a sauna if you have it within your means to purchase some liposomal glutathione. I understand that it's very pricey. I know a lot of my patients don't have money to fork out like that. You can also do N-acetylcysteine.
Okay, this is amino acid.
NAC, right?
Yes,
that's what everybody
NAC.
Calls NAC.
NAC.
That's how most people know it, actually. And so that will help your body to make its own glutathione. And that's actually been used for years and years and years. It's still in use to this day for people who have any kind of kidney failure prior to them going in for any procedures that require contrast dye to protect their kidneys. So it's actually been really well studied to help boost your body's glutathione levels. 500 milligrams along with 500 milligrams of vitamin C is a really good dose before and after sauna. And honestly, I have people, if they're detoxing, I have them do it with every meal. So it's vitamin C and NAC, very inexpensive supplements that actually help to regenerate your own body's glutathione.
Great idea. I understand, which back in the days I did go to pharmacy school, we didn't learn this. I learned it just much later one of the disadvantages of using Tylenol is that, or acetaminophen, my generic name, is that it interferes with your glutathione production.
Absolutely.
So beware, be careful.
Yeah. That's when people overdose on Tylenol.
Yes.
That's what ultimately kills them, is the effect of that depletion of glutathione and what that depletion, the effect that that causes on the liver.
I believe NAC is used for a Tylenol overdose.
Indeed. It is.
You would go to the emergency room and immediately get an IV of NAC to try and save your glutathione and your life.
And your liver. Yeah. Yes. And it's still to this day.
I know. It's shocking to me. How about glutathione's one of those sulfur-containing compounds. How about the things that are like broccoli, sulforaphane,
cruciferous vegetables, and the brassica family.
Is this a place we can look at for improving our detoxification?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, any of your cruciferous vegetables are going to be helpful in boosting your glutathione, not only because they have a lot of cysteine in them, but they have a dynamic about the actual the food itself that actually helps to enhance your body's own glutathione production. I'm never going to tell somebody not to eat broccoli. absolutely, yes. Eat broccoli, eat cabbage, eat cauliflower as much as you desire. That will also help as well. Yeah, good point.
Oh, that's excellent. Any other things with fat-soluble toxins, or should we move to the half and half?
Well, you know, the half and half, we apply the same exact principle to those. Because you're going to be getting rid of some of that through your gut. You're going to be getting rid of some of that through your urine. And in taking the binders, you're helping enhance that which is being eliminated through your gut. And in taking the brassica family of foods, and in taking your NAC, you're helping to manage how much of this is made water-soluble and eliminated. So it's the same principle for both. The half and half get removed, I want to say, a little easier. So they come out more readily. They don't take as long to get out of the system. So I see improvements in test results we do what's called a GPL tox, and that's where we look at the ones that are a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
So we look, again, the plasticizers, the pesticides, the petroleum
additives. Okay, that's where those come in. They're the half and half.
Those are the half and half. And those I can see kind of come down a lot quicker, and we can get a turnaround on those a lot quicker than we do the mold toxin. Those just take longer. The detoxification process is a 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. You have good days and bad, and when you have those bad days, you just have to honor it, and you've got to listen to your body. That's a very important piece to all of this.
So that's where working with somebody to coach you, a good practitioner,
absolutely,
a health coach,
absolutely,
at the minimum to encourage you not to give up.
Yes.
Yeah, we're in a fast-forward society, and we want the magic pill. We want to take that one pill.
Makes it the magic pill.
Yeah, it makes everything all right overnight. Overnight's probably okay. So this is a process,
it
takes time to restore your health.
It does get better. It takes some time. It takes some dedication. It takes a lot of support from family members and hanging in there and honoring yourself, but it can be done. One of the major things with toxicity and mold toxicity in a lot of our patients isn't necessarily the toxin itself. It's the fallout. It's the way the system responds to the toxin, and that's where the practitioners really have a terrific role in helping you to manage all these other systems that are coming apart at the seams as a result of all of this dysregulation and this immune dysregulation and this inflammation. And so a really good practiced practitioner can really help to manage that aspect of mold illness or environmental illness, whatever it might be, as you get from A to B.
So if you were to be fairly sick and you work intensively, Let's say it's maybe your worst case scenario with mycotoxins. How long does it take somebody to get back to a sense of normalcy?
Worst case scenario. I mean, it can take many years. I'll be honest. It can. Uh-huh. And there are those individuals who, you know, maybe they're never 100%. Maybe we get them back to 85%, which I think is a huge improvement when you were at 20%.
Yes.
But, you know, we always strive to get that extra 15, and we're always working toward that. But, you know, that it's a great question, but there is a lot to this that, like I said in the beginning, there are these genetic components to this, and we can only do so much about those. So we're doing the best we can to mitigate and manage all these environmental factors and peel them away, allow your body to then heal naturally and do what it does naturally. But sometimes there are some parts that sometimes can't be undone. That's not always the case. That is a worst case scenario. I will say that I'm going to go say ahead and say 100% of individuals who've had mold or biotoxin illness have a new superpower, and that is that anytime they walk into a building where there's mold, they immediately know. Right. They know it right away, and it's not to say that they necessarily, you know, crumble, but every cell in their body is telling them, I'm in a mold toxic building and I need to get out, and that's their new superpower. And I 100% of patients I've talked to have that.
So they have to be careful, even though they regain some health.
Exactly.
They are forever
sensitive
yeah. and have to be aware of that fact. They mm-hmm. still need to be aware of their environment,
mm-hmm.
live in a pretty safe place for them, be on top of any sort of mold problem or water
right.
pipes.
Right.
Or
and we're all, like you said, we're always going to be exposed to mold a little bit, so they kind of have to intermittently kind of check back in and detoxify. You know, it's kind of now a part of the lifestyle once uh-huh. you've, you know, had that experience. Yeah.
Now, I asked you if you had an experience with any individuals, if you'd like to give us an example.
You did ask me that. And so I was thinking about that today and what story I might like to share. And we've been talking a lot about mold toxicity. But I have an interesting story about just chronic accumulation of just what I'm going to call general toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little boy. He was about, I don't remember, he was between 8 or 10 or something like that. And he had PANDAS, and that is a severe autoimmune reaction to strep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an explosive onset of ticks and OCD. And it's devastating to watch. It's absolutely debilitating for these kids and these parents. And there are very few treatment options. You know, you treat the strep, but these kids tend to, every time strep comes back, the symptoms come back, and it's just this horrible, vicious cycle. And there's this place in Panama that does blood transfusions for these kids, and they get pretty good success rates, and it's the only place in the world that does it. And I was talking to some parents who were on their way to Panama. They were going to go, I think, within the uh-huh. next week or two. And I'm on the phone with them, and I'm looking at their GPL tox for their son. And it's like, you know, one of the worst I'd ever seen.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, he just was loaded with toxins, this poor kid. And so they decided to, you know, put the brakes on that. And work on mobilizing these, you know, toxins out of his body to see if that wasn't helpful. And, you know, a couple months later, we get another test back. The toxin doesn't take quite as long with these other toxins. I want to say it was 6 months later.
Uh-huh.
The toxins were fully out of his system, and his symptoms had at that point resolved. So he hadn't had any other flares, and they weren't at that point planning to go and have this big, huge procedure in Panama. And so I thought that was a pretty dramatic example of how toxins can cause an immune reaction, an inappropriate immune reaction, especially in a developing child, and how that influences our own genetics. That autoimmunity, that was already hanging out in there.
Right.
It was
right.
already hiding in there. But this environmental load, it just overwhelmed the system's ability to compensate for it. And in fact, you know, kind of speaking of pandas, nowadays, it's almost like I can tell if somebody has pandas by looking at their tox screen, because it just seems like a very common denominator between a lot of these kids and between a lot of people with autoimmunity, actually.
Uh-huh.
So you can get, you're always going to have that genetic tendency, but you can get the symptoms oftentimes managed and under control.
Well, how interesting. So, Jessica, your work is with this lab. I'm sure our audience would like to know how to reach you.
So, you can, you know, reach us directly. So just go to thegreatplainslaboratory.com, and uh-huh. you can reach out to customer service and talk to them a little bit about how to get test kits. You can have them shipped directly to your home. We do require a physician's authorization on all the tests that we perform in the United States, so uh-huh. we have to have somebody sign off on them. Ideally, we'd like you working with that practitioner. But if you really are kind of out there in the trenches and you don't have any help, we do offer consultation services. So that's what I do.
Okay.
I help people to understand their test results, and I make recommendations. I'm somewhat limited in what I can provide. I don't provide a lot of follow-up. And so, you know, again, uh-huh. a great practitioner is a very important thing. And we can actually put you in touch with people who have accounts with our lab. And
oh, that's great. They, so you have a referral list for,
referral system.
For practitioners. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, I would say, is a big plus, because it does take some skill and knowledge.
Huge.
On the practitioner's part to understand the testing and provide the counseling and the help, the long-term help that's needed.
We can train the practitioners, too. That's what we're all about. That's
okay,
what this conference
well,
is all about
there
too,
may be so. Some practitioners listening that would be very interested. So this has been great. Do you have any final words that you'd like to say?
Oh, gosh. I guess I... Just for anybody who's out there suffering and or thinks that they're suffering and is being told, like a lot of my patients are being told, it's all in their head.
Uh-huh.
There is hope. And there are people that are willing to believe that there are organic causes to these disease states and investigate. And there are means of investigating potential organic causes to a lot of those unknown symptoms. So.
Right, unknown doesn't make you crazy, right?
Amen.
Oh, well, this has been just delightful. This is Take Charge of Your Health, and I think you've given us quite a lot of tools to work with. I think, first and foremost, having some idea that there could be something underlying everything, and then knowing that there are tools, that there's testing, there are practitioners who can help, there's things you can do on your own, and that's probably the biggest part of it, that you take charge of your health.
Yes.
So thank you for listening, and thank you so much, Jessica, for
Thanks
joining
for
us.
Talking to me.
This has been,
it's been fun.
So much fun. So thank you again. Thank you for your time.
Awesome.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This has been a special edition of Take Charge of Your Health with Carol Peterson and Jessica Bonovich from Great Plains Laboratory. Unfortunately, we in New York are not able to use Great Plains Laboratory, but those of you in New Jersey and Connecticut listening to this show can contact their practitioners and get test kits from Great Plains Laboratory. They're an excellent lab, as you heard, and they're looking at the problem in terms of our own body toxicology and what's creating many of the problems we're experiencing. So this is the beginning of many. Give us some feedback. Tell me what you think, and we will be out there. We're going to be wandering, scouring conferences, getting to you the best of the best. So we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. I know you enjoyed it. Give us feedback. We'll be back next week. This is Corinne Fornari, and you've been listening to Carol Peterson and Jessica Bonovich of the Great Plains Laboratory. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.